You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia ora. You've reached 0800 Jacinda. Unfortunately, John Tamahere is out just now. So is Jacinda. I think they might be out to lunch. I'm here though. I'm Jeff Simmons, the leader of TOP. We're going to be relaunching the party brand on October 3. We got this number because we found that, as usual, our current group of politicians aren't very good at following through. If you're calling because you'd like a homeless person moved along, I'm sorry, but TOP knows the only way to do that is by fundamentally fixing the tax and housing systems. Then we can get homeless people, young people, all sorts of people into their own home.
Righto, Sherry, what was
all
that?
Right, well, that was the Opportunities Party leader Jeff Simmons on 0800 Jacinda, which you can all ring if you want to have a listen. I spoke to Jeff on what's happening next with TOP's relaunch, Gareth Morgan's influence, and what an evidence-based policy structure looks like.
Before we get into that, what do you reckon about that stunt? I reckon, it's a bit cringe, I think.
You know what, I reserve my judgment. It's a little bit clever. I think it's a little bit clever, but I don't know.
Well, anyway, it's better policy than John's, I'm sure. Here is the interview.
Yeah, basically, we're now a membership-run party. I'm the leader, and we are about to relaunch for the election in 2020.
Because in 2018, the board applied to deregister the party. Why have you now changed your mind?
So that was when Gareth Morgan was still in charge, and he made that public, and our membership sort of rose up and said that they didn't want TOP to disappear. So Gareth effectively handed the party over to the members, and since then, it's the members elected me as leader, and the members have been funding the party, and it's a completely different operation, really.
Why is it a different operation?
Oh, well, because under Gareth, he was the leader and funder, and it was really his baby. And now it's like I said, it's a membership led operation. We have a much larger board now. We have members have a much greater say in how the party runs, and ultimately we're all in it together.
Right. So is it fair of me to say there's a conscious movement to try and remove the link with Gareth Morgan?
Yeah. I mean, Gareth had. Obviously we're grateful to Gareth for setting up the party. He helped get the momentum going and helped create the policy, which, is largely still intact. We have the same sort of, evidence-based future thinking ideas in place. We are going to tweak the policy a bit. Our members made it pretty clear that, they didn't enjoy all aspects of Gareth's style, of how he delivered things. So, our aim now is to be more cheeky and less arsy.
I hope you don't mind me asking this, but obviously Gareth has made some comments about the TOP party, and it seems like even beyond this, he's still so intrinsically linked to the party. Is it possible to separate him?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think people will see that when we rebrand on the 3rd of October, that it will give us a clear link. And like I said, I mean, obviously we are grateful for the input that Gareth gave. But now this is now a movement, This is now owned by the members. So it is going to be a completely different beast.
Gareth Morgan invested a lot of his own money into this party. So moving on forward, is it still financially viable without his personal investment?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we've been fully funded by members since Gareth handed the party over. So that's more than a year now. We are, gearing up, tooling up for election in 2020, and we're still, talking to a variety of funders out there. But the fact of the current situation in New Zealand is, the current political situation is that if we can get back to where we were in 2017, around about 2.5%, that would put us on a level pegging or even in front of New Zealand First. So it would make us the fourth biggest party in the country. And with that, going into election year, that would give us serious clout and momentum. So that's really our target over the next few months, to get back to where we were in 2017. And if we are successful in that, then the sort of bargaining power and funding will naturally follow in terms of our 2020 election campaign.
What does a member-run party look like? What does that make it different from the other parties?
Well, the thing that probably makes us most different from other parties is actually our policy committee, which is run by policy experts, and our members decide what they want our policies to achieve, but we make sure that our policies are designed by experts to make sure that they will actually, you know, deliver. That this is the big problem with politics in New Zealand is that, you know, political parties design their policy by basically by surveying the public and working out what the public wants, and often the public don't actually know what's going to be effective to achieve what they really want. That's the crucial part of our policy, crucial difference from other parties. We don't intend to be as democratic as something like the Green Party are. If you hedge, you know, too far in that direction, you can't really get anything done. We're balancing member input with expertise, having experts in the right places.
Tell me a little bit about 0800 Jacinda, because you're saying how you'll follow through with these policies. How do you plan on doing that?
Well, I mean, obviously housing is a... So John Tamahere set up 0800 Jacinda so that people could call it to move along homeless people, which is really just criminalising homeless people. It makes the problem even worse. I mean, really, the problem we have with homelessness is deep-rooted in our society in terms of our relationship with housing. You know, we as a country are using housing as a get-rich-quick scheme, and it's absolutely nuts. It shouldn't be a get-rich-quick scheme. It should be about, you know, providing homes for people. We're definitely the only party that is committed to fixing the housing situation in this country.
Because with 2.4% last election, why do you think this time round you'll move over to the 5%?
We knew at the last election that actually if everyone who wanted to vote top had voted top, we would have ended up with about 8%. The biggest barrier for us was this idea of the wasted vote, as if voting for red and blue, the same old National Labour coalition, is anything, is really an effective vote in the first place. Our focus is going to be on eliminating that narrative. We are going to... Well, you know, if we're going into election year where we finished in 2017, obviously that'll give us a lot more momentum, give us a realistic shot at 5%, and it'll also allow us to have conversations with National Labour about contesting some electorate seats as well, targeting some electorates. How we've seen how this government operates, I think people have realised a couple of things, that really National and Labour are not that different after all. You know, everyone in 2017 was voting for change, and now we realise that we've just got a new colour scheme without any real fundamental change. And the second thing I think people realise is the power of that central ground that Winston commands. If you're in the place of the Greens or ACT, stuck on the edges of a major political party, you don't really have any bargaining power, and you're a complete waste of time. The place that has bargaining power is in the middle where Winston is. We need a party that's in that middle point arguing for housing, for the environment, for these future issues that are coming down the pipeline. That's the place where we can seize the power and actually force these career politicians to actually do something. That's our focus very much.
With all this talk about change, why is Top the party that is going to bring this change? Why is Top running again?
The key strategy here is to be in the middle. You know, that's how we can get real change. Older generations, generally speaking, are going to vote for the status quo because that's what's got them to where they are today.
Top has called itself a radical centrist party.
Yeah, that's the phrase that I use when people try to, you know, put us on the left-right political spectrum. You know, we want to achieve the goals that, you know, what's interest New Zealanders say they want to achieve. The difference with us is that we're actually going to do it. You know, like I said before, a lot of politicians create their policy based on what sounds good, what surveys well. I mean, and we've seen that with Kiwi Build. I mean, that was never going to work. We said it before the election. We actually need to force these politicians to do things that will actually work, and that's where that expert input, listening to experts, really makes a difference.
You keep talking about expert evidence, right, and having policies made up of experts. Could you expand a little bit on that? What is that?
So, you know, obviously, like I said, a lot of politicians come up with their come up with their policies based on what surveys well, what sounds good to the public. In our view, the appropriate place for public input is in deciding what are we trying to achieve, what do we want our policies to achieve. But once we know that, that's when you go to the experts. I mean, it depends on the policy. We have on our policy committee right now, we have an environmental expert, we have an innovation expert, and we have an economist, that's myself. There's an awful lot of expertise out there that politicians ignore. They come up with ideas that they think can't be sold to the public, either because they're too complicated or because...
Am I fair in saying that, I guess, TOP wants the public to vote on their end goal, but wants the experts to have the final say in terms of the process of getting to that final goal?
Yeah, I mean, if you design a policy by committee, you end up with crap policy that doesn't achieve anything. And when you look back over the last 30 years of New Zealand, that it's pretty clear to see why we haven't really solved the problems that we are facing. It's because we've been designing policy by, you know, by public opinion rather than by what actually works. So yeah, you've hit the nail on the
head. My only concern is, looking from the other side, would the public feel nervous or tense that they have no say in terms of the means of getting to that end?
What we are suggesting actually is, in terms of if you really want to talk about fundamental change in the way we govern the country, we want to see much greater use of citizen assemblies and these sorts of deliberative democracy methods as a way of making decisions, and particularly at a local level. So devolve decisions to communities and provide them with the expertise in order to make their own decisions, because, you know, like I said, politicians don't tend to listen to experts because the ideas are too complicated to sell, and because you know, often they will these ideas will be upsetting those that are currently in power, those that currently have money. So what deliberative democracy or citizens assemblies do is that they say, right, well, let's allow this community to make its own decision about how it wants to deal with this sort of stuff, this particular issue. But we will give them the best expertise in order to help them make that decision. We are very much in favour of greater decision making by people, but it has to be informed. Just having referendum for everything like this government are doing is a complete cop out, because so many people, as we see with this cannabis debate, so many people don't bother to actually inform themselves. They just vote it based on what they feel. And that's why we end up with this family first scare campaign. And who wins the cannabis debate will just depend on how much money they've got to spend. That's not an effective way to run a democracy.
Do you think the general public will engage with these experts? Because some might say that the experts you provide might be biased or aligned with party policies. Would they be non-partisan, or how would that look like?
There is an established methodology for how you come up for how you devolve, you know, create these citizens assemblies. The crucial element to them is that you have to provide more than two perspectives, because if you just provide two perspectives, then people will fall into this usual partisan sniping that we see in society, you know, red versus blue, or right versus left, or unions versus businesses, that sort of stuff. In designing a citizens assembly, the crucial thing is to have more than two perspectives. If you can have three to five perspectives, then people start to see the nuance in a debate and can start to take a variety of positions. And you actually just get a lot more thoughtful discussion and debate on the way through.
Their relationships with their girlfriends or their wife. No one, they shouldn't have more than one wife at a time.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.